eat.
Oh, so good.
Drink. Talk. Rick Redding and Steve Coombs serve up savory conversations about Louisville's world-famous restaurant food and drink scene. The wine is uncorked, the bourbon neat, the apps are on the table. Here comes the main course.
And welcome back to Eat, Drink, Talk, Louisville's top restaurant bar podcast, where we dive deep into the local dining and drinking scene. I'm Steve Coombs, your host, with my co-host Rick Redding. How are you, my friend?
Full, as usual. There's a lot going on.
And your thirst is slaked, I would imagine, after the Tailspin Beer Fest.
Yeah, Tailspin Ale Fest was a big success over the weekend. A lot of people out there at Bowman Field, despite the rain and the cold weather.
Underclothed.
I was smarter than you were. I got a station for pouring inside, closer to where it was not raining and windy.
But you had the band to deal with.
Yeah, that's right.
So you're screaming louder than we were.
That's right. Well, they did have the UofL game on in our friend John Good's potato chip truck.
Yeah.
And so I got to catch a lot of that over there. And it was a good time, head ball, I think.
Well, we're going to talk about that a little further in just a minute. But first, we want to thank our sponsors.
That's right. First up is the Eye Care Institute. And Steve, on February 28th at 6 o'clock, they're having another one of their seminars for the public. If you have scratchy, burning, irritated, itchy eyes,
you live in Louisville.
You may have dry eye disease. And if you want to hear about treatment options, home remedies, in-office procedures, and they're even holding a clinical trial, you can just make a reservation at the Eye Care Institute website or call them up at 502-589-1500. They're right down there on Story Avenue.
Very nice. So Harvest, our other sponsor, you know, this Thursday they have a really cool deal, Rick. We've been talking about their chef's table dinners that they have every month, but this one's a bit unusual. We'll start with kind of the normal details. At Judy Shad, who is the owner of Capriole Goat Cheese, she is the guest farmer for the dinner. She will work with Patrick Roney to put together a 6-course goat cheese accented meal for 12 people only. But there's a little twist to it this time. And any of our listeners on the Drink Talk,
we're trying to save people money, right?
That's right. And the generous people at Harvest said to us this morning that anyone who calls in and makes a reservation and says, or mentions Eat, Drink, Talk and how handsome we are, that might get them full price. Better be careful.
Great voices we have.
That's right. 10% off. And that's a good chunk of change, given that the dinner, which I still think is a bargain, for $85, that's 6 courses, 35 more on top of that if you get wine pairings, which I think is a great idea. It's a little splurge.
It's like a $12 value just in the 10% off that you save.
Absolutely.
Doing it here. So.
And it makes them happy that they're hearing, that they're listening to the Harvest name on Eat, Drink, Talk. So call them up. You got to call them to do this when you can't. Do your online reservations. The number is 384-9090 at Harvest in Nulu.
There you go. That sounds like a great deal. Well, we got a lot of news, as usual. A lot of events to go to. I think maybe it's because winter is winding down and we're starting to have a lot more things to do.
Maybe so. People want to break cabin fever and get out.
But, out and about.
It didn't warm up this weekend, though, like we were talking about with the tailspin.
I know. I had a tea time. I had to cancel it. It was just not pleasant enough out
so
there.
So the one, not only was it a great event, about 3,000 people showed up, and beer festivals are just a blast if you've never been to them. People are, of course, in a great mood. 98% of them really do behave well, but that 2% can make some funny stories. And one of the scary funny story that I had, Rick, was this young woman came up to our beer booth where we were pouring, and her tasting glass was broken literally in half. And she came and says, you know, kind of mumbling, and she basically, you know, we figured out, you know, what beer do you have? And our answer was, none for you. And if I would have been smarter, Rick, I would have said, oh, we've got plenty. Here, give me your broken glass. And I just thrown it away. But hopefully she didn't gouge anybody with that, you know, Kirk Douglas style or something.
Yeah, well, it can be, beer drinking can be dangerous. It's the lesson.
We saw some stumbles and bumbles, but by and large, it's just a great crowd. So the next one that comes along, people, go to it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, there's a lot of other stuff out there, too. You know, the planes flying over were cool. And
yeah, it was cool.
And all that. So anyway, I hope I think they ought to have more than one a year. But, you know, we haven't gotten anywhere with that. But you have the big news of, in Indiana, a new pizzeria. I'm going to have to
Parlor, the long-anticipated pizzeria at the foot of the Big Four Bridge in Jeffersonville. It's going to open on March 15th. I learned that last week when I was at its sister restaurant, The Portage House, just right down the road. And Brian Stone will be the chef. And I'm saying he should nickname himself Brian Pizza Stone.
Pizza Stone.
Just
yeah.
to kind of tie it all together. He probably thinks it's dorky, probably already heard it, and wants nobody else to repeat it. But New York-style wood-fired pizza.
Yum, yum. That'd be great.
Awesome.
Well, I've got a my interview later in the show, Steve, is with Ed Hartless. And Ed Hartless is not to be confused with Ed Hart of Kentucky Kingdom fame, but Ed Hartless has been here a year, and he is the top local guy at 4th Street Live.
Yeah. Okay.
And he's a pretty cool dude. And but what's going on with Ed Lee?
Well, Ed Lee, who is also tied to 4th Street Live, we had seen in a couple different publications that he is setting up a camp in Washington, D.C., where his two restaurants, Succotash, one is in Washington, D.C., one is near Baltimore, which are sister cities, basically. He wants to have an outpost there to be able to monitor those two things. So he, like we said, he's going to be a Cordish partner here pretty soon when Whiskey Dry opens up later this year.
Yeah, very cool.
But he's not. Ed said he's not leaving Louisville. He's keeping a base here.
There you go. Well, you can live in more than one place at a time.
Well, sure you can. So what about the Gravy Cup? Tell us all about that, because that's coming up.
Well, it is. It's Saturday. I went over to talk to Zach Fry, who is the organizer, and heard the great story. That interview you can hear on Rusty Satellite Show this week. But Zach is a real estate agent, but he is quite the entrepreneur, and he has started this Gravy Cup 5 years ago. It's grown each and every year. I wrote a story about it on eatdrinktalk.net.
And it's a biscuit and gravy competition, correct?
It actually is. And I my first question was, how many different styles of biscuits and gravy? And my second question is, how many can you sample in a two-hour event? So, you know, it's interesting. I guess there are different ways to do it. The one that won last year was from Con Huevos. It's a competition. First of all,
oh, Comuevos on Frankfort Avenue. Oh, yeah, they're awesome.
Yeah, they're awesome. It's got some like jalapenos in it and stuff like that. Mm, so
that sounds great. There's Zach probably told a chorizo.
He told me about some recipes that have like nutmeg in them and things like that and chocolate. So there'll be a lot of variety, I guess, of biscuits and gravy at this event at the Melwood Arts Center on Saturday.
That's where it is. Okay, but the story is just great, and you got to listen to about how much it's grown.
Yeah.
I mean, like fivefold in a few years.
Zach got the idea in New Orleans when he was down there, and he sampled a different variety there. He came back, made a post on Facebook that said, you know, hey, it would be cool to have a biscuits and gravy competition. And 3.5 weeks later, they had the first one at the Monkey Wrench.
Oh, man.
So and it's grown. It's gone to the Vernon Lanes. It went to the Diamonds on Barrett.
Right.
And this is the first year it's at the Melwood, and they're expecting like 800,000 people.
People like the biscuits and the gravy, clearly so. People also like coffee, and there's a new place to get it this week at Fonte's Coffee Shop. It opens actually next week. Business First had a nice piece on it.
It's passing by the island forever. I was wondering what was going on.
It's gorgeous. Go look at the photos online or just wait and go. I believe it's February 27 is when it opens up, which is a Monday. So, that's going to be cool. Leo's a good guy. He's well-known in the community with his work in coffee, and apparently he is the man to learn from if you want to be a barista. That's what I've been told by one of his old coworkers.
Well, there you go.
So.
Well, speaking of that, I've just got that's a nice tie-in to I want to talk real quickly about Mike Safai, who is I went over to the new place in Shelby Park where he has bought a giant thing. You didn't realize, Steve, but every, like Marriott vacation spot in the country uses coffee made right here at Safai.
So I didn't know that.
He's got quite a
That's a good customer.
He's got a heck of a story. He says he's got a new customer that's going to double his capacity. He's doing like 1 million pounds a week, I think.
Oh my gosh.
Of coffee shipping out of there in those little one serving packets. That's where they come
gosh.
From.
And,
Mike is he's a fascinating guy. It's a great immigrant story. He's from Iran, and there's a great story. I'll just tease it and we'll move on. But he was having trouble getting his visa, back in the 70s, and he was helped by none other than, a young journalist, Iranian British journalist named Christian Amanpour.
No kidding.
got him his visa. And,
nice lady.
He's had a heck of a life over here in the United States since then. His whole family is they're all successful, and I'm going to have a story about that on eatdrinktalk.net later this week, an interview on Rusty Satellite Show. So
speaking of other drinks we like, Holsoppo Brewing's tap room is opening this week.
Yay!
Actually, Tuesday, February 21st. That's today. So stop in to enjoy their quality ales and lagers, the Facebook post says. That's at 8023 Catherine Lane. So if you know the neighborhood, it's on New LaGrange Road. And it's
a wedge. Linden.
I mean, right? Linden, that's right. It between New LaGrange Road and the train tracks.
Wow. So well, that sounds great. It's great to. It seems like every part of town is having, you know, breweries are like being located in every part of town now.
Yeah, it's nice, convenient.
Which another tea? Safi wants to put one in Shelby Park, so that's another thing that's going to happen.
Ah, that's fantastic. And speaking of out of town spots to eat, Das Meal is on this Thursday. That's the German influence meal that's being done out at the Science Hill Inn.
Right. It's Thursday. I've stopped eating today.
Make room for some schnitzel.
Make room for some big old pretzels and cheese.
Yeah,
and
that'll
all
be
kinds
a great meal.
Stuff.
I would love to have gone to that, but I cannot have a schedule conflict that evening.
There you go. All right, so who you got? Let's get on to your guest. Certainly somebody that most of our listeners are familiar with.
So Doug Gossman, he is the owner of the Bristol Bar and Grill. He started it with a couple of partners 40 years ago.
Whoa.
And we talked a little bit about how they're rolling back beer prices to 40 years ago, and that's kind of cool. But the whole story of how he's hung with it and how restaurants have changed are just something that he's talked quite a bit about in this interview. And you got to love him. He's such a good guy. You talk about somebody in this industry that I've never, ever heard a bad word about, not even whispered. Doug Gossman. Tune in.
All right, and Stephen, I'll be back right after the interview.
Head coach of the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers, Jeff Rom.
Today I'm with Matt Jones,
Kevin Harned,
Pat Forty.
But I'm with Anoush Shariot,
Crispin Wall,
United States Congressman John Yarmuth,
Sarah Brofancher, and Susie Eastman.
I have Kristen Boone,
one of St. Matthew's most favorite sons, Danny Flanagan.
It's Pat Day.
The list goes on and on. The most interesting people in the Ville are on the Rusty Satellite Show with Rick Redding. New episodes Thursdays on Louisville.am.
My guest this week on Eat, Drink, Talk is Doug Gossman, owner of the Bristol Bar and Grill, celebrating their 40th year in operation. Welcome to the show, Doug.
Thank you, Steve. Happy to be here.
Well, I'm so glad you had time to make for us. I know you're busy with four restaurants now, right?
Yes. Were they living there? Yes. Fortunately, I've got a lot of help, so the number doesn't indicate the... How stretched out I am.
Well, of course, like a typical restaurateur, I caught you snatching a meal quickly, yeah, punched over the bar.
Yeah, late after lunch, right.
Long after.
Uh-huh.
So, again, this is the 40th year for the Bristol. Now, did you ever dream it would go this long when you guys opened it in 1977, right? Yeah.
I didn't dream I would live this long at that point. You know, I was in my mid-20s, and, you know, you're... I had the great good fortune of being able to create a job for myself, and you're just kind of happy to, you know, be able to do something you like to do, and you know, you want to do it as well as you can, but gosh knows, looking ahead, you know, I had no concept of what was around the corner.
Did you have any vision for the Highlands? I mean, because this really the anchor peg for the start of this restaurant row.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I had lived right behind where the original Bristol was situated, and had for a couple years, and I had watched the neighborhood change over from, you know, from an older neighborhood to all of a sudden a lot of young people moving in.
Uh-huh.
And being one of those young people, I recognized that my options in terms of going out to eat had substantially not changed at all.
Right.
All the activity, it seemed like, in those days, in the mid-70s, was on the outskirts of town in the East End. But it looked to me like Bargetown Road was ripe for a renaissance, and it, little did I know, but it was really unfolding at that time.
And who sprung up around you? Because people want to say, oh, Jack Fry's was the first place. It's like, no, it wasn't. That was the Porcino back when.
It was Porcino then.
And there was a Pasquale's across the street.
Yes.
Who else was around?
Well, there was Len Tinney's.
That's right, further down.
Further down.
Across Eastern Parkway.
I want to say Calandrino's. There was a place called Calandrino's.
Is that closer on the Baxter portion,
yeah,
maybe?
I think so.
I think.
Then there was Hazenham's, which,
right,
you know, as the crow flies, pretty close to where the
Oak and Barrett, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Casa Grisani wasn't terribly far away, but
no,
it
wasn't.
Certainly was no way connected to this strip.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
So Susan came along in 1986. Susan Seiler with Jack Fry's.
Yeah, that was
then
almost
Kathy
10
Carey,
years
1987.
Later. Yeah.
Cafe Metro in 1980. Nancy Shepherd.
Right. Right.
So they followed you and Bim Dietrich and
Tim Martin,
uh-huh, who founded this.
Yeah.
So do you ever pat yourself on the back for that, or just think you're darn lucky?
Believe me, I've second-guessed it. I was thinking maybe I was darn stupid at something a lot of the time. But, no, I mean, it was always something that I loved doing. So, you know, there have been hardships and great rewards, too. So I haven't hurt my hand patting myself on the back too much about it. I'm just like everybody else who went out to, you know, make my way in the world.
Did you ever imagine maybe I should say why rather than did you, but why do you think this brand has had such staying power in Louisville?
Well, I think one big part of it is the type of menu we have and the price range we're at, and just the emphasis we've always had on quality and service, quality products and service. And, you know, those are the basics. I mean, if you do the basics well, you know, you'll do pretty well. So this was a neighborhood where a lot of people lived who, you know, maybe ate out more than people, mm-hmm, in other neighborhoods. And so, you know, that certainly helped the original Bristol thrive. And then as you pointed out, as all these other restaurants opened up over the years, you know, your market gets diluted somewhat, but the market was continuing to grow. And you know, as all those fine restaurants opened up in the wake of the Bristol, you know, this became an area where people wanted to go, or, you know, knew to go.
Right.
If they wanted to go out and get a good meal. And so that synergy helped us all.
And certainly the shopping that popped up around here itself,
yeah,
to make it more of a destination.
Yeah.
What about the patio? I mean, there weren't, of all the restaurants that we just touched on, none of them had a patio, I don't think.
You're right. I can't remember. Well, Hazenhauer's did, if you remember. Yeah, they did.
Well, they had the atrium that they built.
That's
on
what
the back.
It was.
Yeah, that was,
yeah,
a separate restaurant.
It wasn't really open air, I guess. You're correct in that.
But that's like the hottest seat in summertime. No pun intended. I mean, yeah. For years, like, no, I'll wait for the patio.
Yeah, I saw that more in other cities, and just when we decided to move from our original site next door to the other site, you know, we could have gotten 5 more parking spaces, or we could have put a patio there, and it just seemed like the patio made, you know, was the better of the two moves.
You generate revenue off that as opposed to parking cars, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
So you and I discussed a few years ago for another story that profit margins in restaurants used to be much better than now. Oh, I don't think a lot of listeners really understand why that is.
Yeah.
Talk about how it's so much more difficult to make money in this business than it was.
It is. You know, and the biggest part is just the, you know, how much more competitive it is today than it was then, just in terms of the numbers of competitors you have
right
out there.
Absolutely.
Now, and certainly the market has grown, but if you divide the number of restaurant seats, or better yet, divide the market number, the people who eat out in Louisville, by the number of restaurants, you know, that number's gone down and down and down over
the years. To fractions.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And on the other hand, trends are, you know, that people are eating out more. So that mitigates against that. But the bottom line is, it's just so much more competitive, number one. Number two, when we started, it was more of a cash business. People used credit cards in those days.
Mm-hmm.
But nowhere near the universality of use that, mm-hmm. that it represents today. Today, far in excess of 80% of our transactions, if not 90, will be by credit card.
And 3% of that is cut right out.
Absolutely.
Right?
And so there's one expense that 3% of your bottom line right there. You've got different services now that while they bring people into your restaurant, they take a fee to do that. And I'm talking about things like Open Table, delivery services, et cetera,
sure.
et cetera. They expand your reach at a cost. Now, labor has continued to go up. I mean, people decry that the minimum wage is at some pitifully low number, but in a business such as ours, where you have tipped employees,
mm-hmm.
That's held it down a little bit. But the bottom line is, labor costs have gone up
right.
as you know, there's just been a smaller reservoir of available labor.
And certainly, the back of the house labor has become a very tight supply. Over the past few
that's
years.
True. That's very true.
It used to seem that cooks were a dime a dozen.
Yeah.
Now they're very tight.
No, that's true. And yeah, not a dime a dozen. They're, you know, many of them now are going to, you know, school and learning formally how to do that, and they expect and need to make more money than, you know, just somebody coming in off the street.
So we talked about all this evolution, but how much of it overall has been good for the business, and what might have been bad for the business?
Oh, you know, it's hard for me to say that, truly.
Technology's been a great thing. Point-of-sale systems.
Technology has
online order.
Has made it easier
mm-hmm.
for us to get you your food within a time frame you're comfortable with, without mistakes. Yeah, I mean, there have been huge strides made in the last 40 years in terms of that. But there's a cost there, too. I mean, you can't operate out of your cigar box and get the same kind of, you know, the same kind of efficiency that right. you do with these modern systems. But the modern systems, not only are they expensive on the front end, but then you've got the cost of operating them. And
what about the bar? I mean, the bar has changed so much, too. And I think it's a lot
there,
more fun
Steve,
to go drink.
Biggest thing there, if you want to know the truth, is you look at the amount of taxes on liquor, beer, and wine today
mm-hmm.
compared to what it was 40 years
ago. So that's risen.
It's huge. The government's taken a lot bigger share of the profit that used to go to the owner-operator. And that's just the reality. You know, it's sinful to drink, so you're going to have to pay that sinful tax. And instead of it going to a good cause like me.
Well, speaking of the cause, and you guys are celebrating for about a month, talk a little bit about the drink discounts. I thought that was interesting that you're rolling back some domestic beer prices to 1977,
yeah.
and there's some other specials in there that we'll write about also on Eat Drink Talk. But
well, I'm going to give a plug to one of my favorite business commercials as a Louisvillian over the years, and it was Madman Mac.
Uh-huh.
He said, "I want to give it away, but my wife won't let
right,
me."
Right, right.
Well, I've always had it in my mind that, you know, particularly at times like these, why not reward people? You know, just we can make money on the food, you know, and more people will come in to eat the food if they get a heck of a deal on the drinks.
Right, right.
And you know, I dare people to come in here and drink very long without getting something to eat. You know, they're going to do it. So at least I would. So I've always felt like that could be a sensible approach for us because all of our restaurants are pretty large.
Right.
Comparatively. And so I think that's something that can work for us. And at a time like this, why not give it a try? Give people, you know, it's a way we can show our appreciation. And I think it won't put us out of business doing it. And, you know, it may end up making us some money. I don't know.
Well, Doug Gossman, thanks so much. We thank you guys for all that you've brought to the city and its food scene, and congrats on 40 years.
Well, thank you, Steve.
And thanks for being on the show.
Well, I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Hi, this is Alec Bowles, co-host of the What Happens Next podcast on Louisville.am. We talk about improv each week with We Are the Louisville Improvisers.
Yeah, totally.
With Chris Anger and Brian Hines.
Yeah.
And Jenny.
Where's my water?
Okay. Well, right now we're just having a few treats. So we hope you can listen. Find us at Louisville.am in iTunes or using the Stitcher app on your iPhone or Android device.
All right, Steve, that's another great interview with Doug Gossman. What an interesting guy and a great story.
Absolutely. It's the nice guy wins.
that's what we do around here. We talk about find out these interesting stories because everybody's got one. And the other thing we do around here is choose favorite things that we eat and drink every week. And know that we hear from listeners about how popular this segment is. So, Steve, what'd you eat?
Oh, my favorite was the whole roasted trout at the Portage House in Jeffersonville. You got to go to that restaurant. I need to write something up about it, as a matter of fact. But just like it sounds, it was a whole fish, head on, everything. Wow. Sometimes that bothers people.
Have that eyeball looking at you?
It doesn't matter to me. he's not going to be flipping anytime soon. But it was pan-seared and finished at 500 degrees in the oven. And I was using my fork to pick out every little bit of flesh from that skull, everything. It was great. It was delicious. Paul Skoulis, thank you very much.
All right. Well, not so fancy, but I had an experience last week. I thought it was worth talking about on the show because a few weeks back when they opened, I did a piece on Double Dogs out in Middletown. Mm-hmm. It's a chain, but it's a small chain started in Bowling Green. And that place on lunch Thursday, just nothing special, was just packed. I mean, there was a line to get in.
No kidding.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it.
Good
and
on
we,
them.
And we sat down, and I tell we marveled. I went with my son Luke, and what we couldn't believe was all these people here. We placed our order, turned around, and like 3 minutes later, there it was. I had this great buffalo chicken salad. Mm. It was delicious, beautiful. It was like one of those Jimmy John's commercials. You know, you order it, and there it is.
Food freaky fast.
It was freaky fast.
Do they serve it in a dog bowl? Right?
They didn't. They serve nachos in the dog bowl.
Okay.
But not the buffalo chicken salad. So it was a really good experience there. So
with this pineapple shandy that you had.
Yeah, man. I've got to go find that in the store.
Was that at the Tailspin Ale Fest?
Yeah, at Tailspin. I like all this. I'm a girly guy, you know, and when it comes to beer, I like all this light stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I've had, like, lemon shandies and stuff, but this pineapple thing, it tasted more like soda than beer, but it was outstanding.
It's from Traveler Beer in Vermont.
Vermont, yeah.
That's one of the things about those festivals, too, is you get to taste and ask where the heck you get it. Because generally they don't want to send anything into the market that you can't get somewhere nearby. And usually Todd Ants over at Keg Liquors in Clarksville has that answer if it's not here in Louisville.
It was interesting that all the Kentucky breweries were outside, which
that's where we were.
With the nice sunny day, that would have been a better place to be. But all the the other ones were inside. And that's how they split those up there. So anyway.
So my favorite drink is a yet to be named cocktail that was done by Daniel Mahoney, the bartender out at Portage House. And it was made from bourbon, rye, Fernet Branca, and green chartreuse. And I just happened to be talking to him about different ingredients that I'm struggling to use. And I said, green chartreuse just rests on my shelf unused. And he said, I'm working on one right now. And it was fantastic. It was delicious. So again, if you want to try it at home, bourbon, rye, Fernet Branca, and green chartreuse. Of course, the lightest. On the green chartreuse.
Do you manage to stop at one?
I did. I did.
There you go.
As we had to drive home back to the other side of the river. But what a view from the Portage House. I mean, I wish our riverfront were that dolled up. It's not.
I got to get over there more. It would involve driving to Indiana. But
that's right, and paying to cross that bridge.
Yeah.
So before we get to your interview with Ed Hartless, we want to revisit our sponsors again. Harvest, doing that chef's table, coming up. You need to visit their Facebook page to see the entire menu for one. But on February 23rd, the guest farmer is Judy Shad of Caprio Goat Cheese. She's awesome. She's going to work with Patrick Roney to put that menu together. Cheese-centric menu. It's going to have a little bit of cheese in every course. $85 just for the food, $35 more if you want to do wine pairings. And if you're really smart and you're listening closely, you will get this 10% off deal by calling Harvest at 384-9090 and mentioning Eat Drink Talk.
Say, I heard about this on Eat Drink Talk, and I want to come.
That's right, and it'll save you 10%. So do that.
That's a good deal. And for those of you, you know, our other sponsors, so great to us. They're doing a seminar on February 28th. For those of you who think you might have dry eye disease or have symptoms of that, you'll get a lot of your questions answered. There's a question and answer session with doctors right after it, and it's all free to the public. So,
and the doctor will not look like that creepy lady on TV with the strange, way too light blue eyes. You know which one? Restasis? You ever seen her?
No, I haven't.
Stepford Wife with a new job. I'm telling you, people know what I'm talking about, don't you? I know you listeners know who the creepy lady is, kind of Children of the Corn lady. She's a little strange.
That's scary.
So about normal people, let's get back on to normal people. Ed Heartless, tell us about them.
Well, I was really pleased to meet him a few months or so ago. Lifelong restaurant industry guy, stand-up guy, and is really, you know, 4th Street Live, you know, gets a bum rap sometimes. Some of the local establishments, you know, sort of like 4th Street Live. It the local... the efforts to be a local citizen of the community, it's changing. I think Heartless
good.
Is one of the guys behind it. The Ed Lee restaurant coming in is evidence of that. He told me it took over a year to negotiate that deal.
Wow!
And they got it done. And you know they've got the other like Birashibo is a Junior Bridgman restaurant, mm-hmm. and the Bourbon Raw place is local people behind it. So 4th Street Live is making an effort. But he also realizes that a lot of people come in from out of town, want to eat there.
Sure.
And want to go to Fridays because they've got their Fridays at home. It's just like that.
It's a difficult balance, I'm sure.
It is. So anyway, I think it's a very interesting interview with Ed. I'm going to write a story about this later this week on Eat Drink Talk. And hope you enjoy it and tell your friends about the show.
Dessert? Yes, please.
Today, the Eat, Drink, Talk podcast is at 4th Street Live. I'm very happy to be joined by Ed Heartless. And Ed, you're in charge of this whole operation down here.
Yes, I was brought in about a year ago. The Cornish Company brought me in to oversee both the real estate side, the leasing side, along with the restaurant operations. I've been here for just about 1 year.
And it was interesting talking to you. You have quite a history with restaurant operations.
Yeah, I started off when I was in college. I started off going to college for sports medicine, and then ended up working at restaurants. And you know, they always say restaurants will lure you in, and it's tough to get away. And so I started off when I was in college working restaurants, and then you know got the bug, and it just you know moved into management. Then I became district manager for a couple of different restaurant groups, director of operations, and you know my last stint was with SSP America, which we did food and beverage in airports, and I was fortunate enough to open up 22 restaurants in the San Diego airport.
Wow, that's a lot. Now, here in Louisville, you just got a big win, I'm sure, with Ed Lee coming in with Whiskey Dry. Tell me how that came about.
You know, I tell you, it's been pretty much the whole year that I've been here. I think probably my second week here, I met Ed Lee, and we started talking, and you know, we talked about, you know, possibilities of him bringing a restaurant to 4th Street Live and just kind of our direction of, you know, trying to get somebody local. And I'll tell you, his personality was fantastic, and we kind of, you know, became friends. And, you know, it took us a while to find something that would work, but, you know, we're glad to see that at the end of it we came to an agreement, and we're going to be partnering with him on Whiskey Dry.
Okay. And how long is that construction underway yet? Or
we are in the process with permits and drawings. We are hoping to have it open early spring. You know, Edward's got a very busy schedule himself, so amongst with what we've got going on and Derby coming up and Edward's schedule, we're just trying to make it work with both of our schedules.
Sure. Well, like everybody else in town, you're trying to be ready for Derby, mm-hmm. right?
So yes.
Let me ask you a little bit about you know, the restaurant scene here. I know I've talked to some operators that have said they looked at 4th Street Live or considered 4th Street Live, but, you know, in general, it seems like the location is less friendly to local restaurants, or maybe there's some other reason that it's more national chains than local operators.
You know, my short time being here, I think a lot of people have that stigma because of the convention center, and there's a lot of out-of-town tourists that come to town. And, you know, a lot of time tourists do want something that's recognizable, and that's where the chain restaurants do fit. But what we also see now, I think people's habits have changed a little bit. When people go to cities that they're not, accustomed to, they do like to search out and find some local flair. And that's why now we are, with bringing Junior Bridgman in with Beer Chibo, and now with Edward Lee, we're kind of going down that path of trying to bring in more of the local flair. I think there needs to be a good balance.
Okay. Do you find it difficult to recruit the local operators? Or what are the challenges in recruiting them?
I think probably some is what you said, just, that stigma that, we have a lot of chain restaurants, and a lot of times local chefs and local entrepreneurs, don't want to be, next to a chain restaurant. Mm-hmm. But I think, again, that's starting to change a little bit as, like my conversation with Edward Lee, he looks at that as a great opportunity, and he also understands that it kind of gives somebody an option when they come to 4th Street Live. And, he feels that, having that local flair to his business, will attract those people that, may not be looking for a chain restaurant. And again, a lot of these conventions, they're here for, numerous days. So they may want to eat at a chain restaurant one day, but then next day they do want to eat at something that's local, and we'll give them the opportunity to do both.
Okay. So in terms of your lineup now and the future, are you still out there recruiting more restaurants for 4th Street Live?
We're looking. We're a little bit, we're a little bit more choosy on what we bring to 4th Street Live now. Fortunately, with Edward Lee coming to 4th Street Live, our first floor is now going to be fully rented. So we have we don't have any vacancies on the first floor. And second floor is always tough when it comes to restaurants. But we're always looking for, good opportunities. There's places that we can still carve out another restaurant location. I think now what we're looking for is, some more retail. To kind of broaden it a little bit more and make it more than just a dining destination. We want it to be dining, retail, and also entertainment.
Okay. And with the so the local restaurant, the lineup you have now is it seems like in the history, and I've been around the whole time that 4th Street Live's been here. There's some coming and going. Is that the nature of the beast of this type of facility that some restaurants don't make it?
I don't know if it's so much the facility. I think as we look across Louisville itself, it's every day we see it in the newspapers where there's restaurants opening and closing. So I think it's something that's probably a national-wide situation. I think, in the past, and I have not been here since the beginning, but in the past, I think, we may not have been, we really look for great operators now. And I think, some of the turnover and even, 4th Street Live or even, other areas in Louisville or any other city, you really got to have great operators to be able to be, to keep their restaurant, sustainable.
Sure.
And I think that's what we look for more now is we look for great operators, and we'll leave a space vacant until we find somebody who's got a proven track record like Edward Lee, like Guy Fieri, like Junior Bridgman, and those are the last three that we've put
right.
in. But, they've all got proven track records that they're great restaurant operators.
Yeah, now when Guy came in last year, there was a lot of fanfare and hoopla about that. Is that fitting in? Is that going well?
It is. It's going very well. And, that is one, concept that, we have seen a lot of locals come down and try, and it's gotten, very good reviews. But it also, that's another restaurant that the locals like, but also, the
sure.
conventioners and the tourists, when they come to town, it gives them an opportunity to visit a Guy Fieri's restaurant.
Yeah, because I'm just curious about your marketing, because there is the perception, maybe it's unfair, but among a lot of local people that 4th Street Live is taboo. It's all this national thing. Do you market to the local market as much as or in addition to what you do for conventions and tours?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think, you know, the advertising to the tourists and the conventions, it's kind of built in because we're downtown and we've got, you know, a number of hotels around us that kind of, you know, market it for us. But, you know, that's where you've seen over the last year, and you'll see more this year as we're doing more festivals and family-friendly events. We definitely are going after the locals. We want to, you know, as the downtown starts redeveloping, and, you know, we've got Whiskey Row getting ready to open. We got the Omni. You know, Nulu is growing. You know, I can see that there could be a resurgence of locals coming back downtown because there's so much more to offer.
Yeah, and I've heard, you know, the convention center has now been closed, I guess, for several months. I've heard that there's a little bit of a struggle because those conventions aren't coming to the convention center downtown, and there's a lot of construction down here, and people have a tough time getting around. Has that affected you guys some?
You know, I would say that it's affected us some, but I think it's just, you know, kind of the conversation that we have with all of our tenants and operators is we're just becoming a little bit more strategic when it comes to how we market, a little bit more of the, you know, grassroots, so to speak, where we do, you know, much more hotel outreach. We're doing, you know, a lot more this year, like I said earlier, with the festivals and family events that, you know, will bring some of the locals downtown. I think it's hurt a little bit, but, you know, I guess, you know, at the end of the day, we're looking at, you know, what 2018 will have in store for us with the opening of the convention center, the Omni, and a few of the other hotels that will be
opening. Yeah, it seems like a lot to look forward to.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, I just want to ask you a question about Cordish. Certainly, it's history here in Louisville. There's a lot of positive and some negative about things that have happened with Cordish. How much involvement, I guess, or I guess I'm asking how much freedom do you have locally to make decisions, et cetera, or how much is, you know, Cordish involved in what you do?
You know, I think it's, you know, we're you know, definitely a team on it. You know, this is, you know, a different market than some of our other locations. So the good thing about the Cordish is they do allow us, you know, some liberties when it comes to, you know, doing programs or specials or festivals that are you know, conducive to our own local markets. So, you know, there's always, you know, the conversations, you know, with the home office. But, you know, for my first year here, it's been, you know, pretty much, you know, they entrust me to make the right decisions. And that's one thing I do like about the Cordish Company is they let us, you know, truly be operators in our markets. And, you know, you know, for me, that's been a, you know, a nice benefit, you know, coming in and being able to do that with the restaurants that are here now, with the marketing that we're doing with, you know, retail and some of that other stuff. But, you know, for the most part, we do get to make most of our decisions locally. Of course, we have people we have to answer to, just like most companies. But, you know, it's a family-owned business, which makes it, you know, a lot easier to navigate through.
Okay. Okay. And as the chief local executive here, of course, I guess you must maintain relationships with all the restaurateurs, all these operators. You go see them frequently?
Yes. You know, and that's kind of, you know, when I came on board, that was one thing I wanted to do is, you know, everybody here has got to pull together, you know, in a roundabout way. The restaurants are all kind of competing with each other. But if we pull together and kind of, you know, go after it at a unified front, it makes it a lot easier. So we do tenant meetings where we strategize about, you know, concepts and ideas that we can come up with. You know, we're getting ready to do a Pints for Parkinson's, which is a Gordon Biersch initiative where they raise money for the Parkinson's Foundation. And Gordon Biersch has been doing it for the last couple of years on their own, and this year we're going to collaborate with them. We're going to make the festival bigger. We're going to put it in the middle of the street and, you know, hopefully raise more money and awareness for Parkinson's. But, again, that's kind of how our group of entities will pull together on a kind of a united front.
Well, cool. Well, you have a lot of big weeks here at 4th Street Live. Give me an idea of what I mean. I would assume that Derby Week is the big thing, but what are your other, you know, the busiest time? You've been here a year now. What's the big week?
Well, I'll tell you, last year it was kind of a whirlwind. You know, Derby Week definitely is a big week. But we also see, the GIE convention was a very large week for us. We've got Farm Machinery Show in town right now. But then, you know, even, you know, some of the other, you know, we did a Strassenfest last year that was a very big success on the street, which was an Oktoberfest festival. So it's there's never a dull moment, I can tell you that. There's things that pop up all the time, and you know, it's when we talk about a busy week, you know, I would say some of those large conventions make it a very busy week, but there's so many other things that we put into it, you know, Give Local Louisville and all of the, you know, some of these other events that we put on that, you know, really make it, you know, can make a Thursday a very big Thursday just because of the event that's being put on the street.
All right, Ed. Well, thank you for being on the show. Cool. I appreciate you taking the time.
All right. Thank you.
If you just can't get enough, catch up on the news of the city's restaurant scene every single day by visiting www.eatdrinktalk.net. Steve and Rick share all the latest local scoop from Louisville's restaurants and bars. You can also find old episodes of the show and connect with the guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Eat well, my friends. Another episode next week.